The Supreme Court decision 50 years ago this month, Brown versus Board of Education, opened the door to a decent education for millions of African Americans. And though true equality remains a distant goal, blacks have made great strides since then in virtually all areas of education. But there's also a feeling that the end of Jim Crow segregation marked the end of something else, too. The rich and supportive role that many all-black schools played in African-American community life. After Brown, the best teachers and most motivated students could seek new opportunities elsewhere. As a result, schools that were once pillars of excellence fell into decline. A.H. Parker High School in Birmingham, Alabama, is one of them. With a long list of distinguished graduates and a 100-year history, it is still a symbol of pride. But it's also a case study in the paradox of integration.
This is a story of one school's experience with racial integration, as viewed by three different generations. Students in the 40s, they dreamed of a day when segregation laws would crumble. Students in the 60s, the civil rights foot soldiers, they led the fight for equal rights. And finally, students who attend Parker today, they're still waiting to see the benefits of that battle. A.H. Parker High School opened in 1899 as Birmingham's only high school for black students. There were only 18 students on that first day, but over time the enrollment swelled, reaching more than 3,000 by the mid-40s. The school was so crowded, classes were held day and night. Graduates were turned out in January and June. Black teenagers from all over the city flocked to Parker. With a rigorous academic program and classes in printing, mechanics, and nursing, Parker was the most reliable engine of upward mobility in a segregated world.
Well, it was the school, I believe, at the time. Negroes, blacks from far and around went to Parker High School. It was a thing of containment, really, but, you know, it was also a thing of education.
That's Joe Norris. He's my uncle. He and his five brothers all went to Parker, including my father, Belvin Norris, class of 43. My dad died in 1988, but growing up, I heard an earful about Parker, and it took on a mythic quality in my mind. I attended school in the 60s and 70s, and don't get me wrong, schools were viewed as important institutions in my time as well, but the high school my father described was altogether different. It was a symbol of pride, a place where blacks could prosper against the toughest odds. Fred Horn was one of my father's classmates.
We believed that we were better than anybody else. This was taught, and we had to graduate and prove to ourselves and to the world that we were better.
Fred Horn went on to become a state senator in Alabama, but in some ways he never left Parker. He taught at the school, coached football, basketball, and golf, and secured funding for the school's athletic field that now bears his name. And like many Parker grads, Horn stays in close contact with former classmates. Arthur Harrell is one of them. The Parker they remember was a cocoon of high expectations and harsh discipline.
We knew what we had. We knew that any night we might see the Ku Klux Klan riding around because they had some things that they had to do. So we had to live with it. And this is the adjustment that we made. We didn't spend a lot of time talking about it, but we did a lot of time reading and studying and trying to make the adjustments to be strong enough that when we faced it, we were able to face it on a level that was level to anyone else's.
Did Parker help you do that?
Oh, yes. Everybody in Parker helps you do that from the janitor on up.
As a member of the blue jeans and sneakers generation, I always looked at the vintage pictures from Parker in our family collection with curiosity. The girls wore dresses, the boys sported skinny ties and starched white shirts. Dress codes were strict. Dress for success was the rule.
My mother, I had to learn something in school every day. I had to be smarter in some manner when I got home than when I left that morning. To reward her for those shirts and the ties, shirts ironed and the pants and all that stuff, I had to reward her every day by knowing more.
My father and his brothers all left Birmingham and headed north after graduation to seek better opportunities beyond the grip of Jim Crow. Woody Norris is another one of my uncles. He and my father both settled in Minnesota. When they talked about Parker, and it was often, there was a misty-eyed nostalgia. Parker, they said, did not just give them dreams. It gave them the confidence to pursue them.
I didn't think that Birmingham would be that way forever. I didn't think this country would be that way forever. But we prepared ourselves for the future.
And when the world changed, you were going to be ready.
Exactly. Very few dropouts in Birmingham because they felt that you had to go to school to learn.
How were teachers viewed then?
We respected the teacher. We looked up to the teacher. They was our mentor, you see, and we felt that they can help us prepare for a better life.
The changes they dreamed of did not come without a fight. Not in Birmingham, which by the 1960s became America's Armageddon for segregation. The city's strict enforcement of Jim Crow laws kept blacks from using the same restrooms, water fountains, or lunch counters as whites. And it kept children from attending the better-equipped and better-funded schools in white neighborhoods. In April of 1963, civil rights activists, led by Dr. Martin Luther King, launched a campaign of civil disobedience in Birmingham.
When you go in jail for calls like this, the jails cease to be jails. They become havens of freedom and human dignity.
Yeah.
And so we need everybody. We need your support. We can't stop now. We've gone too far to turn back.
After a month of daily demonstrations, the city's jails were full. So the civil rights leaders adopted a new strategy. Black children were called to serve as foot soldiers for freedom. And many of those children came from Parker High. It was still the main school for black teenagers in the city, and it's just blocks away from Kelly Ingram Park, the staging ground for the daily civil rights demonstrations.
The word got out. Something was going on downtown. We needed to be there.
Edmonia Anderson was a Parker High sophomore in 1963.
How did the word get out? How did you hear that young people were to go down to Kelly Ingram Park and march?
Transistor radios. If you can remember those, somebody had one. We heard the word. It got around. It spread like wildfire. Hey, they need us. We need to be in attendance. They started then, and Mr. Johnson stood in that hall and said, no one is to leave this school.
The principal.
Right.
The principal was Robert C. Johnson, an imposing man known as Big Red. Horace Huntley is a historian with the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute. He says Birmingham's police commissioner, Bull Connor, warned that Johnson's job was on the line if his students dared to join the protest.
When they came out, Mr. Johnson was standing in the hall, and this one fellow who was the leader of the group, he said to Mr. Johnson, Mr. Johnson, we've got to go. We've got to go, Mr. Johnson. We've got to go. And Mr. Johnson stood up and said, no, you can't go. He said, but Mr. Johnson, we've got to go. We got to go, Mr. Johnson, got to go. Got to go, Mr. Johnson, got to go. Got to go, Mr. Johnson, got to go. Can you imagine 200, 300, 500 students saying, we got to go, Mr. Johnson, got to go.
And I mean, they broke down the fence and the gates, and they left, marching downtown.
The call for equal rights was heard all over the country, but on May 3, 1963, Birmingham became the epicenter of that battle. Hundreds of children, many from Parker, gathered at 16th Street Baptist Church. It's the same church where later that year, four little girls would be killed in a bombing sponsored by the Ku Klux Klan. That morning, civil rights leaders, including Dr. King, told students to be strong. Violence on their part was not allowed. At 1 o'clock, the students left the church and crossed the street to Kelly Ingram Park. There, Bull Connor was waiting with attack dogs and water cannon, trying to extinguish a fire that would not die. Timothy Archie, then a Parker sophomore, still remembers that day.
They brought the water from the corner of 5th Avenue and 16th Street. I then was maybe 200 pounds. My playing ball weight was right at 200 pounds. I mean, it shot me across the park like I didn't weigh but 15. I mean, just shot you across the park. You just like you a piece of paper.
Do you still remember what it felt like to
oh,
get...
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. I never will forget it. It's like you get hit upside the head with a bat, something like that, of that nature. The force of that water.
I had to go. I had to be a part of this. This was something happening that I had to be there. I had to see some of it. Wanted to do my part. If it was only just standing there, cheering, hollering, whatever, I wanted to be there.
This was the turning point of the civil rights movement here in Birmingham. Children made the change. We made the change. A lot of adults had went to jail, had did this and got houses, got blew up, and you know, but now the students was out there.
Timothy Archie and Edmonia Anderson are proud of Parker's role in that battle. Between 2,000 and 3,000 children were arrested. Historian Horace Huntley says that helped to cement Parker's place in history.
History has judged that decision to put children in the streets rather harshly. It was a risky strategy, mm-hmm. but it was also brilliant.
It was risky, it was very brilliant, and it worked.
Get on board, children, children, get on board, children, children, get on board, children, children, let's fight for human rights.
I hear those mobs howling and coming round the square. Bankers, those freedom fighters, but we're gonna meet you there.
Get on board, children, children, get on board, children, children, get on board, children, children, and let's fight for human rights.
Well, we're the freedom fighters.
That year, the courts ordered the desegregation of Birmingham schools. But today, many of the Parker students who fought for integration now question whether it benefited all students. That story when we continue with All Things Considered.